All right, we're beginning here with the new perek, the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuf Dalet Amud Bet. Shnei Dayanei Gezerot Hayu BiYerushalayim. There were two individuals who put together Gezerot or dealt with the issues of Gezerot BiYerushalayim. Admon V'Chanan Ben Avishalom. Chanan Omer Shnei Dvarim. Admon Omer Shiva. So Chanan said two things that we're going to say that the Chachamim disagree with. And Mon said seven things that the Chachamim are going to disagree with. Mi shalach the medinat hayam, vishto tovat mizonot. It's an individual who is overseas, and his wife is asking to be sustained out of the estate, to be provided for. Chanan omer, tishava basof, velo tishava betchila. Chanan says that she takes a shvua at the end. At the end is when she comes to collect her tuba. She doesn't have to take a shvua when she comes to collect her mizonot. So that's Chanan's position. You should just know that the Rambam here in the Perush Mishnayot, we mentioned this earlier when this was quoted back on Peichet, that the Rambam says that the tchila and sof here is not associated with an almanah, and therefore it's not associated with ketubah at all. But rather, tchila and sof relate to mizonot themselves. At the time that she comes to take the mizonot in the first place, which is that she's now asking the Beit Din to intervene, she has to take a shvua, that she doesn't have anything set aside. And basof is when her husband returns, so he gets to ask her to take a shvua, that she didn't take more than she was supposed to, or she didn't misappropriate any of the monies. But we'll go with Rashi and the Rov HaRishonim, who suggest over here that tchila and sof refers to mizonot and the ketubah. And therefore, the Mishnah is dealing with an almanah in that sense, that he goes overseas, and then he never returns from overseas. So at first, she's taking mizonot because he's alive. In the end, then she's going to take her tuba because he passed away. So Chanan says that she doesn't have to take the shvua front on the mizonot, but in the back end, she has to take a shvua that she doesn't have anything from the tuba or set aside for the tuba. Nechleku alav b'nei Kohanim Gidulim. So the Bnei Kohanim Gidulim argued on him, Vamru, Tishava B'tchila U'basof. Should take a Shavua in both of these instances, both in the beginning and the end. Tchila, that he didn't leave her any money for the Mizonot, and that's why she needs to liquidate assets of the estate. Basof is that she's collecting her Ktuba, that she didn't withhold any monies to pay for her Ktuba, and that she's deserving of her entire Ktuba. I'm Rabbi Dosa ben Erkinus, Kidivrehem. Rabbi Dosa ben Erkinus supported the position of the Bnei Kohanim Gidolim. I'm Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, Yafe Amar Chanan, Lo Tishava Elo Basof. And we have Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai supporting the position of Chanan. Viraminhi, Shlosha Dayanei Gizelot Hayu BiYerushalayim. There were three Dayanim that dealt with Gizelot in Yerushalayim. Admon ben Gadai, V'Chanan HaMitzri, V'Chanan ben Avishalom. Kasha, Tlat, Atrein. Kasha, Gzerot, Agzelot. First of all, we have a question of 2 versus 3. Our Mishnah says Shnei. This Breita says 3. Our Mishnah says Gzerot. And this Breita says Gzelot. So how do we reconcile between them? Bishlama, Tlat, Atrein, Lo Kasha. The 3 against the 2 is not an issue. The Choshiv Leiktani. Our Mishnah only enumerated the most chashuv members, so that's why it only mentions Chanan ben Avishalom and Admon, whereas the Breita mentioned others that were included. Even though in the Breita that we just quoted, it quotes Admon ben Gadai, who would be the Admon of our Mishnah, then Chanan HaMitzri, then Chanan ben Avishalom. So Chanan ben Avishalom, who is mentioned in our Mishnah, is the last one mentioned in the Breita. Chanan HaMitzri is mentioned before him in the Breita. Nevertheless, you can see there's a large Tosafot here that deals with that shows throughout Shas that the order in which Tanaim are brought is not necessarily correlated with their greatness. It might have to do with other factors, including Yichus. Someone has greater Yichus, or there are certain patterns that you'll see in the Mishnah in terms of who's quoted first and then who's quoted afterwards. So he says, don't draw the conclusion that Chanan HaMitzri is greater than Chanan ben Avishalom just because he's mentioned before him in the Breita. And therefore, Admon ben Gadai and Chanan ben Avishalom are the people mentioned in our Mishnah, and that is not a steer to the fact that Chanan HaMitzri is mentioned prior to Chanan ben Avishalom in the Breita. And Tosafot says you can't say that the Braita and the Mishnah are talking about two different jobs or two different courts, because one individual would not get, whether it's the honor or the position of power, that allowed them to be in a position in both of these places. And since we have overlap between the names, there's clearly a connection between the Braita and our Mishnah that needs to be reconciled, and you just can't say that they're talking about two different entities entirely. Ela gzelot agzelot kasho. What are you going to do with the fact that the Braita says gzelot and our Mishnah says gzelot? Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak shayu gozrim gzelot al gzelot. That's exactly what they were. They were gozer the gzelot for gzelot. Kedatanya kitma nitiya. If it nips, uproots a young sapling, Rabbi Yossi Omer gozrei gzelot shibirushalayim umrim. Those that were gozer the gzerot in Yerushalayim would say, Nitiya bat shnata shtei kesef. If it was a one-year-old sapling, then you pay 2 silver coins for that, 2 dinarim. Bat shtei shanim, if it's 2 years old, arba kesef, then you would pay 4 silver dinarim for it. So in the end, what we're saying here in the end is that gozer gzerot on the gazlanim, Rashi says knasot, they imposed fines on them. Others suggest, like you can see here in the Braita that was brought, that they set fixed payments for certain types of items, that you didn't have to adjudicate these cases. Anytime an animal went into a field and ruined saplings, you knew how much they had to pay per sapling. It wasn't that they had to go now and assess every time they had a case. They established certain fixed prices for it. That's another way to view it. Others suggested that they went beyond the letter of the law. So even though a gazlan is only chayav to repay the damage that they created or to create remuneration for the losses that they caused, nevertheless, they put knasot. They put fines on top of that to engender certain behavior, from dissuading people from doing certain things. So they try to not only get the rectification done, which was get the restitution made, but they also try to create a rehabilitation of the people and to have to wreck their behavior, so that they didn't get a similar pattern of behavior over and over again. V'remini, shlosha dayanei gzerot hayu b'Yerushalayim. So now we have another braita that says we have 3 dayanim of gzerot in Yerushalayim, Admon, V'chanan, V'Nachum. Amar Rav Papa, Mantana Nachum. Who's the one who put Nachum into the braita? Rabbi Natan, he. The Tanya, Rabbi Natan, Omer, Af Nachum Amadi, Mikozrei gzerot b'Yerushalayim haya. V'lo hodu lo chachamim. So that Braita must be under the authorship of Rabbi Natan, and the Chachamim disagree with that. So therefore, that's alternate Braita, is a Braita of Rabbi Natan, but our Mishnah is following the position of the Chachamim. Vituleka, are there no more Dayanim like this in Yerushalayim? V'amar Rabbi Pinchas, Amar Rabbi Yoshaya, Shlosh Meot V'tishim V'arba'a. There were 394 Batei Dinim Ayu B'Yerushalayim. There were courts that were found in Yerushalayim, Kedagdan, Batei Knesiot, and in parallel, there were 394 shuls, Lehitzpalel Behen, to daven in them, Uchnedam, Batei Midrashot, and Kenegadem, they were Batei Midrashot, to learn Mishnah and Talmud, Uchnedan, Batei Sofrim, where they used to teach the children, Mikra, Dayanim, Tuvahavu. The Gemara says, you're right, in Ochanami, there were plenty of judges. V'chi Kamrinan, Aguzei Guzeirot Kamrinan. We're talking about a subset of the Dayanim that are found in Yerushalayim, and those are the Gozrei Gezerot. They were either a very particular job, meaning that they worked with these Gezerot and Gezelot, or they were even a super court, in a sense, that they sat above some of these other courts, and that's why they are singled out or delineated separately. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Asi, Gozrei Gezerot Shibushalayim, Hayu Notlim Scharan, Tishim v'teisha maneh mitshumat alishka. The Gozrei Gzerot in Yerushalayim took their salaries from the Trumat alishka, which means that after the Truma was taken over to pay for the Korbanot at Zibur, we know that the Shairei alishka, that which was left over from the Trumat alishka, were used for Dvarim shel Tzorchei Zibur in Yerushalayim. They used for public needs of the people within Yerushalayim. One of the things that was mentioned is to pay the salaries of the judges that were sitting in Yerushalayim. So it says that their salaries are 99 maneh per year. Lo ratzu, If they didn't want that, Mosafim Lam, then we add on more to their salary. So my ass, Lo Ratsu, Atu Brishay Askinim. What do you mean they don't want that? They're going on strike, they're looking for more pay? What does that mean that they didn't want 99, then they get more? Tzela Lo Sapku Afa Pi Shalo Ratsu Mosafim Lam. If it's not sufficient funds to support them, then we insist that they take more money in order that they should be able to live, that they're not given a subpar salary. So if 99 is not sufficient for their living expenses, then we add on to that in order that they should be able to live properly, that they should have, as Rashi says, kedei chayehen, enough for them to live or to survive. Obviously, there's some subjectivity to that, but basic needs and basic means that they should have. So therefore, if 99 doesn't suffice, then we'll give them more. It's an interesting amount of money because 99 maneh is not a small amount of money. Maneh is 100 zuz. So that means that they were talking about 99 times 100. So that's 9,900 zuz. It seems like that was not a small amount of money because we know in other contexts the amount that are given to aniyim and how much one in the Mishnayot and Maaser, how much a person needs to live for a year in considering, you know, obviously at the poverty level, but still, 9,900 was not a small amount of money that was being given to them, but obviously they're living in Yerushalayim, where it was expensive to live, they were within the city, there was limited resources available, and therefore they had to give them enough money where they could survive in the city of Yerushalayim. Karna have a shakel istira mizakai, vistira michayav. So Karna used to collect an istira, a coin, a sela, vistira mechayav, from both parties, when they came to adjudicate before him, whether he exonerated them or whether he implicated them, whether they were obligated to pay or they were freed from payment, he used to collect from both sides, both parties, a sela, v'dayin lehudina. And then he used to adjudicate the case. How did he do that? V'aktiv v'shochad lo tikach. You're not allowed to take any bribes. You're not allowed to take any monetary payments. But you're going to say the pasuk's only talking about when you take it from one side, not both sides. Because over there, he may pervert the justice. If he takes from one party and not the other party, we're afraid that that's going to color his outcome. Karna came into shakel mitarvayu, maybe because he took from both sides. He's not going to favor any one of the parties. Since when is it mutar to take money, even if you're not going to favor one of the parties, where you're taking equally from both sides? What is the pasuk coming to teach you? If it's going to teach you, do not exonerate someone who really is obligated, and do not take someone who is obligated and exonerate them. That's already an explicit law in the Torah that you should not pervert justice. That doesn't need us to tell us don't take bribes, because if bribes lead you to the wrong outcome, then you're already covered under the pasuk of lotate mishpat. Ela afilu liskote da zakai ulechayev et achayav. You're not allowed even to take payment to exonerate those that are right and to obligate those that are chayav. Amra Torah, v'shochad lo tikach. Shochad is shochad, doesn't matter if it's to do the right thing or to do the wrong thing. And even if both parties pay shochad over here, the person does not remain impartial, because he then only sees good for both parties, and he may actually try to create a pshara, or some sort of compromise position, rather than adjudicating the case, because he's only seeing good for both parties. So there's a danger, even if both parties are paying shochad, that the judge then no longer will be impartial. Where it says, "Hani mili heichi d'shakel b'torat shochad." That's only if they take it as payments, in a sense of bribery. Karna b'torot agra abashokil. He took it as payment, as compensation. So now the Gemara here differentiates between compensation and bribery. So if the litigants are paying him, thinking that they're going to sway the justice or sway the case, even though both parties give it to him, so in the end there's no favoritism toward one party or the other, that's still an issur of shochad lo tikach. Now obviously if you pervert justice, then there's a problem of lo tate mishpat. But now he said he took it as compensation, which the Gemara asks, Ubetora dagra mishori. Since when is he allowed to take compensation? Vatnan. Hanotel schar ladon dinav bitelim. Person who takes compensation in order to adjudicate, all of his decisions are annulled. It says, Hayoni milei agardina. That's only if he's taking compensation for adjudication. Karna agar betela habashakil. He used to take monies for his foregone salary, that he had an alternative option to work, and if he gave up his work in order to adjudicate the case, they compensated him not for the adjudication, but compensated him for the lost wages that he had from his other job. What you're asking is a fair question, which is, what about from Shumat Alishka? Shumat Alishka might be in a different category, because over there it's coming out of the public funds for the benefit of the public. Well, you have to still argue over there that the payment to them from the Shumat Alishka is schar b'teila, but it's given out of the coffers of the tzibur, so you don't have the problems of shochad and of direct payments. Karno seemingly had alternative work, and then he would adjudicate cases on intervals or at certain times. People asked him to adjudicate cases. He wasn't a permanent judge, whether it's private arbitration or private adjudication, but he didn't do it on a regular basis, so he wasn't supported out of the funds of the tzibur. So there, if he's going to get compensated, he has to get compensated, again, for schar b'teila, the same way that those judges that work for the tzibur do it, but they collected a fixed salary out of the tzibur because that was their permanent job. They did this all the time. Whereas Karna seemed to do this on irregular basis, and therefore they compensated him when he did do it. That's how Tosafot explains the difference. The last Tosafot here explains the difference between Karna and those judges that were taking monies out of the coffers of the tzibur. So now the Gemara claims that this schar b'teila is okay. The Gemara says, "Vagar b'teila mishori." Since when can you take compensation even for your foregone wages? Vatanya. It is despicable or disgusting for a dayan to take compensation, but if he does take compensation, his judgment or his decisions are still upheld. Hey chidami, what's the case? If he took compensation for adjudicating, dino din, how could it be that his decision stand? Vatanya, didn't we just bring the brayta before that said, "Antel schar ladun dinav b'teilim"? We already just said before that anybody who takes compensation for adjudicating, his decisions are vacated. Ella, agar b'teila, must be he's taking compensation for his foregone wages. Viktani, michuar hadayan. That such a dayan is considered to be disgusting, despicable. It says, hadi mili b'teila delo muchucha. That's only where the foregone wages are not clear. Karna b'teila d'muchucha habashokyo. He only took foregone wages which were obvious to the parties that they were taking him away from other work that he could have done. And since they were being mevatel from other work that he could have done, it was clear that they had to compensate him in return for that. Because the hava, he had a job. That he would be tahi bambaro d'chamra v'yavi le'zuza. He had a good nose, a sensitive nose. They used to take him down into the wine cellars, and he used to sniff the barrels in the wine cellars, and he used to tell them which wines were on the verge of turning into vinegar and needed to be used right away, and which wines could be kept and were continue fermenting in the cellars. So he had this job that he was getting paid, and he got paid. Every barrel that he sniffed, he got a zuz for. So he knew exactly what his wages were, and he knew how much he was giving up if he went to adjudicate. So if he got compensated in that situation, it's payment that is muchacha. Since it's payment that's muchacha, then it's not a problem to take payment there because there's a clear loss of wages for him to come and adjudicate, and they just compensate him in like or in kind, meaning that whatever he would have done or gotten for his wages, that's what they pay him, that's fine. But to pay him for what's called schar b'teila, without any clear indication of lost wages over here or what he would have done otherwise, that is much more difficult. Kiyadu Ravuna, similar to the case of Ravuna. Kiyavate dina lekame. Whenever a case used to come before him, Amalu, Havoli gavro didolili becharikai. Give me someone who will draw water in my place or in my fixed position. He had these fields and he had to water his fields. And so he needed to be there in order to draw the water. If he wasn't going to be there, he just said, pay for someone to be there to do it, and then I won't have to be there, and I'll be able to adjudicate the case. So again, there is clear schar b'teila. If he's not there, they pay for the replacement, and then he's available to adjudicate the case. And then I'll take care of your case, and I'll adjudicate your case. Just as an aside, I had a Rebbe many years ago, Rav Serevnik, who went to Rav Shlomo Zalman Urbach at one point, and asked him if he could go to Machon Leiv in order to learn a profession, a trade, so that he could have, really collect Schar B'Teila. He says, how can it be here? I'm teaching Torah, and I'm going to collect Schar B'Teila, but I don't have a profession. I'm not trained in anything that I can collect Schar B'Teila from. I want to go get a degree and continue teaching Torah, because that way I can say that it's Schar B'Teila. I'm trained to do something. I could have gotten wages, and now there's a B'Teila de Muchucha. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, if that's the reason you're going, you should definitely go. And he gave him permission. He went and he got a degree, I think an advanced degree in some sort of astrophysics or physics. I don't know what he did. But he really did it for this purpose, that you have Schar B'Teila, it's Muchucha, that you have an alternative option in order to collect Schar B'Teila over here. This Gemara also connects to the Gemara that's found in Bechorot, which you can see it's cross-referenced over here, which is the Mishnah in Bechorot, which puts the Dayan in the same category as Torah, which is the din or the halacha that is learnt over there, is that you must teach Torah for free, because Moshe Rabbeinu and the Kodesh Baruch Hu says the same thing, ma'ani b'chinam, afatem b'chinam. Just like we taught for free, just like we present the Torah without taking any compensation, afatem b'chinam, so too you must teach Torah b'chinam. So that comes to the question of how do people who teach Torah, who are leaders in the community, how do they take compensation for that? That comes to our Gemara. That's the other half of this, which is Schar B'Teila. Because they are foregoing other opportunities or other wages, we pay them for that Schar B'Teila and not for their teaching of Torah directly. But then that leads to certain issues. For instance, if a person only teaches Torah on Shabbat, they only teach Torah on Shabbat or on Yom Tov, times that they couldn't collect other wages, then how do you pay them for Schar B'Teila? So then they talk about the preparation time, that it takes time to prepare the shir and to get ready and to gather the materials for the shir. So if that's done on a weekday, then that is foregone wages that they committed in order to teach the Torah. So there are ways to get around this issue of compensation. There is the larger question if one is allowed to take compensation at all for learning Torah, where you're not teaching and where you're not necessarily foregoing other wages, and that's the broader question of kolel and the ability to pay. And obviously the Rishonim line up on different sides over here regarding what is permitted and what is not permitted. And then there are certain changes that happen over time, which the Mishnah Berurah already describes in the Bar Halacha, that the times have changed where it's much harder for a person to support themselves on a part-time basis, or on go to work and also do learning. If we don't have people who are committed to learning, then we're going to have serious gaps in the Mesorot HaTorah. So there are also things that change over time, and that's all part of this discussion. And our Gemara plays a central role in this discussion because of this Schar B'Teila. Amar Rabbi Bo, Bo'rei kama smuyot enehem shel mekabli shochad. Come and see how blinded are the eyes of those that take bribes. Adam chash beinav, person has an eye ailment, notei mamon lerofe, person goes and pays the doctor, safek mitrape, safek eno mitrape, and sometimes the doctor is successful at procuring a cure, sometimes he's not successful. He gets paid either way, the doctor, whether he's successful or not successful. Behein notlim sheve pruta, umisamin enehem. And over here, by those that are taking shochad, taking bribery, they take a payment, and guaranteed that their eyes will be blinded, or that they will no longer be able to see correctly. Shneamar ki ha-shochad yaver pichim, because it says that the shochad, bribery, will cause the blinding of those that are wise. Tana banan, ki ha-shochad yaver enei chachamim, kal v'chomer letipshim. If the shochad of bribery causes blindness in the eyes of the chachamim, then certainly it does it for those that are foolish. V'saleif divrei tzadikim, and it perverts the words of the tzadikim. Kal v'chomer the rishayim. So certainly it does that for those that are rishayim. Gemara says, midei tipshim rishayim b'nei dinaninu. What do you need this type of kal v'chomer for? What type of judges are we speaking about here? If we're talking about judges, we're assuming that they are chachamim and tzadikim. So what does that mean, that it's a kal v'chomer to rishayim and tipshim? Hopefully the rishayim and tipshim are not those people that are appointed as judges. Elohi kamar. This is what it means. Keshochad yaver enei chachamim, The shochad will blind the eyes of those that are wise. Afilu chacham gadol. V'lokeach shochad. Even a person who is a great, wise man, a tremendous tamar chacham, he takes bribery. Enu niftar min olam. Belo smayot alev. That he will not leave this world without his heart being blinded. But obviously it doesn't mean literally his heart being blinded, but he will no longer have that wisdom that resides within him. He will leave him. Bisalev divrei tzadikim. And it will pervert, take away, remove the tzidkut of the tzadikim. Afilu tzadik gamur. Belokeach shochad. Even a person who is a complete tzadik and takes bribery. And yuftar min olam belo tiruf dat. He will not leave the world until he loses his mind or he has no longer settled. He's no longer a tzaddik. Rashi says, "Rachi kamar kav chomer shismat einav kishe tipeish b'sofo v'yeshev ledun." So Rashi introduces the idea, and Tosafot plays on it as well, which is that in this instance, there's progressive problem, which is that if the chacham gadol takes shochad, takes bribery, then over time he's no longer a chacham. That's what's being promised here. That he's no longer a chacham. If he's no longer a chacham, he's going to be tipesh. That is judging. As if the tipesh is judging, then when he continues to accept bribery, certainly over there it's going to affect him. So that's what the way Rashi describes it. Because he's going to be a tipesh in the end, and he's going to sit then to judge because of the fact that he took bribery. That'll be the problem. Tosafot says, well, after the first time he takes bribery, he's no longer a tzaddik. He's already a rasha. And after the first time he takes bribery, he's no longer a chacham, he's a tipesh. So Tosfot sees it as the same person right after the first time. The first time he takes it, he's a tzaddik and a chacham. After the first time he takes it, then already he's deemed to be a rasha and a tipesh. So that's what it means here, that the rasha and the tipesh will be adjudicating cases. It's the same person. It's just the day after they took the bribery, that's their status at this point. Rashi says this is a promise that in the future that will happen to these individuals and they will continue to adjudicate. So there will be Rishayim and these Tipshim that are continuing to adjudicate because that will be their end. Kiata Rav Dimi, Amar, Darash of Nachum Bakwein, Mai Dichtiv, what is meant by the Pasuk, Melech Bimishpat Yamid Aretz, Beish Trumot Yaharsena, the king Bimishpat through judgment, through justice, Yamid Aretz, will uphold the land. Beish Trumot, and the man who is generous or donating, Yaharsena will destroy it. Im Dome Dayan the Melech. If a judge is like a king, She'enu Tzarich Leklum, Yamid Aretz. Then, if he's like that, he will uphold the land. That means that if he's like a king, Rashi here describes that he's a king, that he doesn't require any help from anyone else. He's independently wealthy. He doesn't require monies from anybody else. And that's why he is like the king. The king doesn't require payments from anybody else because the king has everything. That's one way to learn it. There's also, Rabbeinu Tam mentions another side to Melech, which is that he doesn't require anyone else in decisions of Torah. Meaning that he is knowledgeable enough that he doesn't rely on others to go get his Torah. And Rabbeinu Tam says that you can say both of those in the Melech, that a Dayan should be both. He should be both self-sufficient in his monetary needs, and he should be self-sufficient in his wisdom or his knowledge of Torah. And that makes it a true Dayan, because then he's not relying on others, and he will come to a proper decision and not be affected by any of the parties that are there, because either they are presenting ideas, or he has to go ask others for decisions or for money, and therefore that would affect his impartiality. Im domel kohen shemachazer al granot yaharsena. But if he's like a kohen associated with trumot that goes around to all the silos to collect his trumot yaharsena, then he'll destroy it because then that person is dependent on others. If I be depending on others, then it's hard for him to be impartial when those type of people come before him. Amar Rabba bar Rav Shila, haydayina deshayol shilta pasul meidan dina. A dayan who borrows from his neighbors cannot adjudicate cases. That's only if he doesn't have that which to lend out in return. But if he has something to lend back, we don't worry about it, because then that's normal neighborly interactions. I mean, if there is a quid pro quo, he borrows from his neighbors, his neighbors borrow from him, then he's not dependent on his neighbors. There's no relationship there which is one-sided, in which he's going to favor the neighbor because the neighbor is always giving him. But if it's a one-way street, then they're always lending to him because he doesn't have. That's the equivalent of bribery. It's the equivalent of payments because he's dependent on the neighbors. for all his needs. If that's the case, he's not going to be impartial when it comes to cases with these individuals, because these individuals are providing for him. How could he say something or bring a case against them when he knows that he's dependent on them for his needs? Ini, is that really true? Va Rava Sha'il Shilta Midbe Bar Merion? Didn't Rava borrow something from the house of Bar Merion? Afagav Delo Shaile Mine, even though they didn't borrow from him. Why didn't that disqualify him from being a Dayan? Hatam La Akshovinu Hul Debai. Over there, Rava borrowed from them in order to give them a status. Very similar to a Gemara we find in Kiddushin. The Gemara in Kiddushin says that the husband who's trying to marry the woman, and when he wants to provide for Kiddushin, he has to give the woman something that's worth a pruta. So if he gives the woman something that's worth a pruta through that value, through that hana'a, then she is nitkadesha to him. What happens in a case where the woman gives a gift to the man? Can there be Kiddushin that is generated through that? Well, it seems obvious, no, because she's the one who's providing the hana'a, not him. Gemara gives a case where he's an ish choshuv, where he's a person of high stature, and granting the individual a gift, and him accepting it, provides hana'a. So you know that if you were to give a gift to someone who was the prime minister, the president, and they accepted it from you, that would give the person a sense of hana'a, a sense of satisfaction that this individual accepted the gift. So over there, the Gemara says you can have kiddushin premised on that. When she gives the gift and he accepts it, behana'a, that he accepted the gift, then there is kiddushin. So the same thing over here. When they gave the gifts and Rava accepted them, he accepted them not because he needed it, not because he wanted the gift, but to give stature to the Bei Bar Merion. Because if he accepted gifts from them, then people would think highly of them. So it was not for the benefit of Rava. Rava didn't need it. He didn't even need to accept it. He did it in order to give them status and to help them out. And so therefore, in a sense, he was giving to them and not taking from them. He didn't need it. He didn't really want it either. It was just because they were in need of a certain getting more stature or standing within the community. And so he helped them out by accepting a gift from them. Amar Rava, Maitaima de Shochada. What is the reason behind Shochad? Kevan de Kabule Shochada Mine. Once a person accepts a bribe, Ikarvale Date le Gabe. He becomes one with the other individual. He has a certain sense of closeness with this individual. V'have ke gufe. And it's as if it's himself there. V'ein adam roeh chuvah li'atzmo. And a person can't see negative or detrimental things for himself or about himself. So my shochad. What is shochad? Shuchad. Now over here the other alternative gears is shu'echad, which would play into what we just said now, which is that Anotein v'amekabel nasim lev echad, as Rashi says, that the giver and the receiver like turn into one heart. They become like one individual. They become like a single entity. When you give shochad to the other individual and you bribe the other individual, then your interests become his interests. And since your interests become his interests, it's as if you're one, and he won't see anything negative for that side or for that party. Now, as to a question of why the Gemara is asking over here, why or what's the reason behind shochad? We generally don't do that with regards to mitzvot d'oraita. There's a mitzvah in the Torah not to accept bribery. Why is the Gemara here plumbing the depths of why not to accept bribery? What's the reason not behind bribery? First of all, it seems obvious. And number two is, why are they even asking the question? They're asking the question because we are going to come up now with a series of cases here where certain Amoraim recused themselves from cases, even though it wasn't clear bribery. It wasn't a case where they accepted something. It wasn't something where even other people would have deemed it as bribery. But they felt that because even there was a chashash or shemetz of bribery associated with it, that they refused to accept the case, they recused themselves from the case because of this issue of the reason behind shochad. That once they felt that there was something that was out of the ordinary that was granted to them, that you start to feel a certain affinity for that individual, and therefore you can no longer be impartial. This piece here in the Gemara is the basis for Eliyahu Dessler in the Michtav Me'Eliyahu, one of his main issues in terms of an individual looking at themselves and improving themselves, which is that our Gemara states unequivocally here that ein adam roeh chuvah li'atzmo. A person never sees anything bad about themselves. And therefore it's very hard to be an impartial judge about oneself and also to be an impartial judge about one's decisions. One makes a decision. Are they really making the right decision? Are they making a decision that encapsulates the Dat Torah and the direction that Hashem wants? Or does a person have a personal interest in this decision? And they're making the decision because of personal interest, for personal benefit. How do you separate between those items? And Rav Dessler says, our Gemara makes it very clear that it's extremely difficult for an individual to do this. And over here it tells you that a person who accepts Shochad becomes one. And number two is a person named Amroeh Chuvah Le'etzmo. So Achad Kama V'Kama, when a person is coming to make decisions about themselves, number one, they don't see the negatives for themselves. And number two, in terms of Shochad, if there's a personal benefit or personal gain to be there, then obviously their interests then become aligned with that decision point, and they don't necessarily come to the right decision. And so much of our avoda in life is trying to separate out our personal interests from the direction that Hashem wants and from the impartial direction that Hashem would want from us to make the right decisions. But this is the tremendous musar that comes out of this Gemara that he sees as a directive for us in life about how to conduct ourselves and how to deal with decisions and how to look at ourselves, that we really have to have other people help us. We have to get to a point of impartiality in these things, and it's very difficult, and we have to take that musar because ein adam roeh chuvah le'atzmo. Right now, we have Amar Rav Papa, lo lidon inish dina l'man d'rochim le, v'lo l'man d'sani le. Rav Papa says a person should not adjudicate cases l'man d'rochim le for people that like him, v'lo l'man d'sani le, and not people that hate him. D'rochim le, someone who likes him, lo chazi le chova, he will never see anything negative. D'sani le, lo chazi le schuta, he won't see anything positive. So this has a number of layers to it. First of all, we're not talking about bribery here anymore. That's number one. Number two is, as Tosfos points out, La ba'ohev visoneh ayv dairi bei Rabbi Yehuda Rabbonan gabi edut dairi. We're not talking about someone who loves or hates, that is a machloket in edut, according to Rabbi Yehuda Rabbonan, to the gabi dayan, afilu Rabbanan modeh de pasul. Because there, even the Rabbanan would agree that it's pasul. Elohatam ba'ohev, over there we're talking about someone who's an ohev, means like a real ohev, shushbino, his best man at his wedding. V'sonei, shelo diberi mo shloshi yamim. And over there, when demet asonei, we demet somebody he didn't talk to for 3 days. Avahacha bohev, over here, the ohev here is someone, not that he loves, not his best man, it's not his best friend, just somebody who did something nice for you. That's number one. And the one who's a sonei, maybe somebody wronged him a little bit. So over here, we're talking about people that are not necessarily ohev and sonei in the classic sense, where it's somebody that he has despises, or somebody that he has not had a relationship with for years, or ohev, someone who is his best friend his whole life, over there, everybody would agree that a dayan has to recuse himself from such a case. Here we're talking about ohev and sunnah, where there's a small item or a small issue that draws them more of an affinity or a distance between them. That's number one. And number two is, which is important to focus over here, it's not only the judge's feeling, it's also the feeling of the other parties. I mean, that it's not here that it says that he is one who he likes, but more likely, you read it, the man d'rochim le, someone who likes him. And not the man d'sani le, not someone that he hates, but someone that dislikes him. So that the impact is even more far-reaching, which is that we're saying here, not only is it not about love and hate in the general sense of normal relationships, here it's a small item that comes up. Not only is it the judge's feelings, but it is the feelings of the parties towards the judge that also impact the judge. And that we saw in Masechet Yevamot, that the heart of an individual is swayed by the heart of others. So when someone else dislikes you, then you tend to dislike them. Someone else likes you, you tend to like them. So that is being borne out over here, which is you have these individuals who do some small item that's nice to him. That already, Rav Papa says, creates a problem in impartiality, because if he did something nice for you, you're going to feel good about him, you feel good about him, that's already going to cloud your judgment. And the same in the opposite side is true. Amar Abayi, Ait Suber Mirabonon, Dimrachmin Le B'nei Mato, this young whippersnapper, Talmud Chacham, that the city, the people of the city like him, he's popular there, La Mishum D'Malei Tvei, he shouldn't get into his head, it's because he's doing such a good job. It's not because they really like him. Because that actually, first of all, would cause a problem, because then he would have to recuse himself from all cases in the city, because the people of the city like him. The people of the city like him. That means that you're already into this problem of liking or people that have a good feeling about you, and Rav Papa ruins your impartiality. Ela mishum de lo mucha fu b'milei d'shmaya. The only reason they like you is because you're not giving them mussar. If you gave them mussar, they won't like you anymore. The only reason they like you is because you're not giving mussar. So don't take it to heart that they like you, and that doesn't cause a problem for him to adjudicate cases in the city. And Amar Rava, Rava says, Mereish avamina hani b'nei chuza kulo rachmali. Rava was the Muradatra, was the Rava of the city of Mechuza. He said, I thought everybody loved me there. Kevin davai dayina amina minayu sanuli uminayu durachmili. After I started adjudicating cases, I said, you know, some of the people here like me, some of them don't like me. The people that I let go or I exonerated in the case, they like me. The people that I implicated in the cases, they didn't like me. So I thought now, there are people like me, don't like me. Kim de chazai deman de mechayev lei haidna kazachi de machar. Amina imrachim kulu rachmuli imisanu kulu sanuli. So at that point, when I started having other cases where the same guy that I exonerated before and now implicated, then came to the conclusion that imrachim kulu rachmuli, if they all like me, then they like me. Imisanu kulu sanuli, if they all hate me, they all hate me. There's no real love and hate over here, no real liking of Rav over here. Certain days they like the Rav, certain days they don't like the Rav. It has nothing to do with him personally. It has nothing to do with whether they really do or don't like the Rav. It has to do with whether things are going their way or not going their way. When things go their way, they like the Rav. When things aren't going their way, they don't like the Rav. And therefore there's no problem of impartiality here because he doesn't have this sense that the people in the city, some people like him, some people don't like him. He says that Imrachim kulum rachmuli. If they all like me, they all like me. They all hate me, they all hate me. So at that point, I realized that it had nothing to do with me. They weren't liking me or hating me. It all had to do with whether things were going their way that day or not going that way that day. And therefore, I came to the conclusion: either if they love me, they all love me. If they hate me, they all hate me. And there is no issue of bias that can come out of this because there is no differentiation between the parties. There is no love and hate that really has to do with the relationship. It simply has to do with the way the wind blows on that day. Tarabanan. B'shochad lo tikach eno tzarich. Lomar shochad mamon. Doesn't have to tell you about taking bribes through monetary payments. Elafilu shochad dvarim nami asur. Even bribery through words are asur. Midloktiv betza lo tikach. We wanted to talk about simply monetary payments, it should have used the word betza, which would refer to a monetary bribe. So now, the fact that it used the word shochad, which is more ambiguous, it includes not only monetary bribes, but even bribes by words. Hey chidami shochad devarim. What is this case of shochad devarim? Ki had Shmuel, like this case of Shmuel. Hava avar b'mavro. He was crossing a bridge, or some sort of, whether it's on a raft or on a bridge. Ata ugavra yayv leyade. This individual was standing there. Shmuel needed help, so he extended his hand to help him across. Amalei, ma'avitech. Shmuel said to him, what's going on? What are you doing here? So Amalei, dina itli. I have a case with you today. So I figured I may as well help you cross the bridge because I need you anyway on the other side. Amalei, pslin alecha de dina. He says, I'm no longer able to adjudicate your case. You have now made me or forced me to recuse myself from the case. So that's shochad devarim. Because there he crossed him over the river, he helped him out, and then he told him, he helped him out. He goes, I'm coming to adjudicate a case before you. That's shochad devarim, because here this person just did a tova for Shmuel. Now again, this is what Rav Papa was referring to before, and maybe what the Gemara was referring to before. This is clearly the fnim mishurat hadin. This is not something that should really bias the judge. But Shmuel said, that's enough. That type of ohev and soneh, or that type of shochad is enough to cause the individual to no longer be impartial, and they would recuse themselves from cases that involve people that had just helped them out or done something, a tova for them, because that's the reason behind shochad. The reason behind shochad is that once somebody does something good for you, you stop seeing negative things about them, you only see positive things about them, and we'll see examples of that in the Gemara. Amemar aviyoti v'kadon dine. He was sitting there adjudicating a case. Parach gadfa reshe. A bird was flying over his head or landed on his head. Ata ugavra shakle. This individual ran over to grab the bird away to protect Amemar. Amalei mavitich, what are you doing over here? What's going on? Amalei dina itli. He says, I have a case coming up and I wanted to make sure you're okay. Amalei psilna lechal dina. He says, you just forced me to be removed from the case. I can no longer adjudicate your case. Marukva vishade roka kame. Marukva was walking along the street and there was spit saliva on the ground. Adugavra kasye. So an individual ran before him to cover it up, so he wouldn't be disgusted by it. He could walk by it. What are you doing over here? Why are you doing this? I have a case coming up with you, so I'm clearing the way so you can come through. He says, now I am no longer available to be a judge in your cases. You have ruined me to be a judge in cases that involve yourself. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi had a sharecropper that worked for him. Every Erev Shabbat, he would show up with a basket full of fruits. Basket of fruits that belonged to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. He was a sharecropper. That means the sharecropper provides a percentage of the field to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, and he keeps for himself a percentage. So he used to bring this basket full of fruits as payment to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Yom Echad, Aitalei Behei B'Shabto. In one case, he brought it on Thursday. He brought it a day early. Amalei, Maishna Idna. He says, what's different about today? Amalei, Dina Idli. He says, I have a case. I have to go to court. Vamina, Agav Urche, Aitalei Lamar. He says, because I'm on my way anyway to the court, I'll stop by the house and drop it off. Why should I come twice? I'll have to come again tomorrow. I may as well drop it off today while I'm on my way to the court. Lo Kabu Mine. He didn't accept the fruits from him on that day. And then Amalei, Psilna Lacha Ladina. He also said to him, I am no longer available to adjudicate a case for you because of what you did. Otiv Zuza Drabanan. He put together a Zug, Zuza is a Zug Drabanan, a pair of Rabanan, and they adjudicated the case. So he brought in replacement judges to take care of the situation. What's interesting here is that he got a Zuga Drabanan, he got a pair of Rabanan. Question is, how did he get two? Don't you need a Beit Din of three? Why is he pointing a Beit Din of two? So some suggest that he had two, and then the third one wasn't mentioned because it wasn't important. Those two were important, and therefore they mentioned those two. Or, he appointed two, and those two appointed the third judge. Or, it's a possibility that they were mumchim. And since they were mumchim, you're actually allowed to adjudicate even alone. Because a bokir, a mumche, in dinei mamonot can adjudicate alone. He just put two of them together in order that they should help each other out. But one would have been sufficient either way. Bahadi de ka'azil va'ati, he sat in the back. Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi, who had recused himself from this case, sat in the back watching the case go on. And as the case was proceeding, Amar, Ibai Tain Hachi. Ibai Tain Hachi. On behalf of his sharecropper, he's saying, oh, he could say this. He could say this. And what he realized was that he was biased. That he was biased because of what his sharecropper had done. Amar, Tipach Nafsham Shel Mekabelei Shochad. That they should explode. They should swell up the nefashot of those that accept bribery. Umani shenol natalti. I didn't even take it in the end. I refused to take the gift. Vim natalti sheli natalti. And even if I took it, it was mine. I mean, the sharecropper was only bringing what belonged to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Kach, that's what ended up happening. Mekabel shokhad al kat kama vekama. Those that accept bribery, certainly they are going to be biased. So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi saw in this the tremendous bias that is caused by kiruv aleiv, by having an affinity for an individual. That it's not just the monetary payments, it's this affinity that draws between the people, and you start to be clouded in your judgment. You start to favor or look more positively on the individual. And again, here he's so talking about ever so slight a change in the behavior of this individual. He always brought Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. He brought it every time on Friday. Here he brought it on Thursday. It belongs to Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. Still, he biased him. And so he says that I see from this the tremendous bias that is caused by Shochad, and that's why all these Amoraim recused themselves from these cases when somebody did something for them and said that I have a case in front of you. As soon as they connected between the action that they took and the case, they recused themselves from the case and said, then I no longer can be a judge for you because I've lost my impartiality with regards to this individual. And that's again what we said before, Amarova, my time at the Shochada. Came into Kabiole Shochad Amine, Ikavale Date Gabe. And as soon as you accept something from that individual, you have an affinity for them, Fabi Kigufe, and he becomes like you, and then you no longer see anything negative for this individual. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Elisha, Aitale Haugavra Reshita Gez. So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Elisha is obviously a Kohen, and this individual brought him the first shearings that have to be given to the Kohen. Amalei Mehechat, he says, where are you from? Amalei, Madoch Plan, which is from such and such a place. Wait, between that place and here, there's no kohen that you could have given the ratio to gaze to? What did you hold that and bring it to me? I'm really Dina Idle says, I have a case. Famina Gavur Chai, I delay the mar. Says, it happened to be on my way anyway. And you're the kohen on there. I'm already coming this far. I may as well give it to him. I'm really Psilna Lachal Dina. Rabbi Yerushmo Balisa says, I'm no longer available, or I can no longer adjudicate a case for you. Lo Kabil Mine. He did not accept the Reshita Geis. Otiv Le Zugad Rabbanan, the same thing as Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. He appointed for him two new judges to take care of the case. Again, the question of two. Bikadenile, he adjudicated the case. Bahadi Dikazov Ate, as the case proceeded, Amar Ibaitain Hochi, Vibaitain Hochi. The same thing happened to Rabbi Shmuel Bar Elisha. He starts to see these things. He says, oh, he should say this, he should say this, he should say this. Favoring that party that was going to give him the Reshita Geis. Amar tipach namsham shemakabel shochad. The nefesh of those that accept shochad should expand, blow up, should be ruined. Ma'ani shelo natalti. I did not accept the gift. Vim natalti sheli natalti. And even if I took it, it's mine. I'm a kohen. I'm entitled to take it. Kach, this is what happened. Mekabel shochad alchad kama v'kama. That certainly those that take real bribes, certainly how much more biased they will be in a case, how it will color their judgment. Ravanan, Aitele, how Gavra Kanto, Dil Gildani de Begile. Fanan, this individual brought him a basket full of fish from Begile. Rashi says they're small fish. I think the Orch says they're big fish. Amalei, Mavintech, what is this? What's going on here? Amalei, Dina Itle. He says, I have a case coming up and I'm just bringing you a nice gift. Lo Kabo Mine. He did not accept it from him. Amalei, Psilna Lacha, Ledina. He also says, I'm no longer available to adjudicate cases for you because you now put me in a position where I can't adjudicate. Amalei, so he says to him, Dina Demar Lobaina, I don't need your services as a judge. I don't want you to adjudicate my case. But Kabuli Lekabi Omar, so he says, I want you to accept them. Delo Lemena'an Mar Me'akuvei Bukurim. Don't stop me from my ability to bring Bikurim. So what does that mean? The Tanya. V'ish ba, mi ba'al shalisha, ve'avei li'ish shalukim, lechem bikurim, esrim lechem sorim, v'karmel v'tziklono. This is talking about Elisha, and they're bringing him food and gifts and items that he will have. V'chi Elisha ochel bikurim hava? Why are they bringing lechem bikurim to Elisha? Elisha's not a kohen. Since when does Elisha get bikurim? Anyone brings a gift to a Talmud Chacham, ki'ilu makrib bikurim. It's the equivalent of bringing bikurim or makrib bikurim in the Mikdash. Rashi says, how do you know that Elisha wasn't a kohen? Halo lo kohen haya? Sharei matzinu b'divrei yamim shnit yachay saviv al shevet gad. Because we see in Divrei Yamim that his father is mentioned as a member of Shevet Gad. Dichtiv yani v'shafat. Babashan. And we know that Shaphat was the father of Elisha, at least according to the Gemara. And therefore, if his father was from B'nai Gad, he certainly is not a Kohen. That's how Rashi proves it. Tosafot says, I don't know why Rashi went through all that trouble, because we have a much easier way to say it, which is that Elisha wasn't up by the Beit HaMikdash. Elisha's in the Shomron. So if they're bringing him to Bikurim, even if he was a Kohen, what is he doing with the Bikurim in the middle of the Shomron? The Bikurim go up to the Mikdash, to the Mizbeach, and that's where the Kohanim get them. So forget about Rashi's complicated proof that he's from Shevet Gad. Even if he's a Kohen, the fact that he's accepting in the middle of the Shomron tells you it's not really Bikurim. So why is he accepting them? Because Talmud Chacham that takes a gift or is fed by these individuals or gifted by these individuals is the equivalent of bringing Bikurim. So this individual said that he didn't want him as a judge. In this case, Ravanan, he simply wanted him to accept the gift because that'll be the equivalent of him bringing Bikurim. Amarle, kibule lo be'inan di kabel. He says, I did not want to accept the gift from you because, first of all, he thought it was coming to bias him in the case or that it would bias him in the case. Hashkud amartli taima makil b'ilna. But now that he explained to me the real reason why you're bringing the gift, now I'm willing to accept it because the motives behind that gift are proper and good. And therefore, I'm willing to accept it, that it's the equivalent of bringing Bikurim to the Talmid Chacham. And the idea being that the Bikurim, which are the equivalent of giving our first fruits to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, donating them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Mishulchano, gives them to the Kohanim. But the idea being that we recognize that Everything that we do is made to Hashem. And to thank Hashem, we take from the first. The first are the thing that you would most associate it with, your own Maseh Yadayim. And if you take that and give it away, that's the greatest demonstration of recognition that Hashem gave you that and not yourself. So in the time of the Mikdash, we did it through Bikurim and bringing it up to the Mikdash. And today someone can accomplish the same thing by giving it to the Talmud Chacham, by giving it to someone who is a leader in the community, because that demonstrates that you recognize, first of all, their contribution in terms of Torah, their contribution in terms of their service to the community, but it also is a recognition from your side that whatever has been given to you is given to you by Hashem and is not Kochi Botzim Yadi Asadi Yetachai Lazeh. Shadrei the Kameh to Rav Nachman. So then he sent this individual to Rav Nachman to adjudicate the case. Because obviously he had recused himself. He also accepted it at this point. He's not going to be the judge in the case. Shalach Lei Nidani Mar Lahai Gavra Da Anan Psilmanei Ledina. Says, you take care of this case, Rav Nachman, because I, Rav Anan, have to recuse myself from the case. I can't adjudicate the case. Amar, midashalach liyochi. The fact that Rav Anan sent it in this way, saying that he is disqualified from the case, shmamina kreivayhu haba. It must be a relative of Rav Anan's. Kaim dina diyatme kameh. So at that point, he had a docket of cases in front of him. One of the cases was a case of yitomim, of orphans. Amar, hayasei, v'ha'isei. Both of these are an assay. It's not so clear what the assay is over here, but Rashi says, mitzvat adayanim assay, which is ushvatitem tzedek. To be a judge and to adjudicate a case is ushvatitem tzedek. And then there's also the assay of kavod ha'torah. The assay of kavod ha'torah is that one has to provide kavod ha'torah. Now it's not so clear what the kavod ha'torah is. There's an assay of kavod ha'torah with regards to a Talmud Chacham himself. There's also an assay of Kavod HaTorah when it comes to maybe Eshet Talmid Chacham, that we see in the Gemara. But a broader group of relatives of a Talmid Chacham, we don't necessarily find that there's an assay of Kavod HaTorah. Others claim that the assay over here is Kekatan Kegadol, that you have to look at all cases, whether they're big or small cases, and therefore you're obligated to do it at a first-come, first-service basis, not on the basis of which is a bigger case or a smaller case. And so therefore, that was the question. The assay is that he should have done it in the order that they came. The Yitomim came first and not this case. But on the other side, he has this assay of Kavod HaTorah. The other assay of Kavod HaTorah might be the fact that Rav Anan sent it to him, asking him to do it. So in order to comply with Rav Anan's request, that may have been an assay of Kavod HaTorah. So he says, assay the Kavod HaTorah adif. So he says, because of that, the assay of Kavod HaTorah is adif. Therefore, he pushed aside the case of the Yitomim and gave priority to this case. Salke le dine le yatme, after the dine, he pushed aside the case of the Yitomim and brought in this case. Kevin de chazib baldine yikara tukavidle. After the baldin, the litigants here saw what type of honor he was giving him. Istatam tanate. All of his claims, all of his ideas got shut down. So it was clear here that the case jumped the line because of this connection between this individual and Rav Anan. And then the other party in the case realized that their case was getting priority because of that. And once that happened, he lost his ability to make claims because he felt that the case was biased against him. Now, it wasn't biased against him at all. It had nothing to do, but just the mere appearance of bias caused that problem. So again, this is another view in terms of the depth to which shochad affects the individuals, which is that here, where even in a sense there was no bribery, there was nothing that was done that was wrong, nevertheless, just because one party perceived that there was bias towards the other party, that caused them to have an inability to express any of their position. Okay, we'll stop here by the two dots on the top of Kuf Vav, Amud Aleph.